Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. As most of you who have been watching our series are already aware, our speaker in the studio is Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raj Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. Today's subject is called Formulating One's Value System. Formulating one's value system. And Sister Denise has taken us through a variety of topics in which she has shared basic spiritual principles, which are both profound, universal, and very personally applicable. We invite you to watch this program today with an open mind, with a view to looking at your own life and ask yourself quite honestly whether that which Sister Denise is about to share makes any sense to you, and we hope that it touches you in such a way that you are able to take it and make it part of your own life. Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us today, and it's always a pleasure to have you in our studio.
Thank you.
When it comes to one's value system, my experience has been that on any given day as I'm going throughout my life, I don't think about, gee, I wonder if I'm an honest person or a dishonest person. And it's with a sense of shame, I think, that I do not pay as much attention to what actually are my values. And yet I consider myself to be an upright person. Why is it that people like me do not give as much attention to focusing on this as we should? What is the cause of that?
We are fed a lot of things through many channels. The media gives us many messages through all the different forms of media, primarily the internet and the TV, but also there are other messages that we get through the education system, through how society conveys things to us, through how the different states work with the people who are belonging to those states, and constantly a person is being told things, and a lot of it has to do with do it this way, not that way. If you cross a certain line, that's called a crime, you will be punished, you'll be put in jail, and so on. And if you do these kinds of things, we'll reward you, you'll get a higher status, and everybody will think that you're good. So these messages are going on, and people grow up with that, so they get used to it and they don't really think about it. I think it's only when a person finds themselves at a crossroads or in a dilemma that they really need to ask themselves these questions. And so in the world today, there are so many things that happen that people hear about or see or come to know of that are actually part of their work environment, their family environment, where they have to really think, you know, what's going on? Is this right? Is this wrong? And they feel discrepancy between an inner feeling and maybe the way other people are thinking about it, maybe the messages that are coming. And this sort of trigger will require a person to sit down and think, you know, where do I stand in this regard? If a person finds themselves standing outside the conventions, then that's uncomfortable, because the conventions say that these are the lines, you stay inside these lines and then you're okay. Then if a person finds that they're outside those lines, then they have to say, well, does it mean I'm not okay, or does it mean they are not okay, that's them? Values is all about drawing certain lines, and below this line is negative, above this line is positive. And so we live within these spectrums, everywhere from very negative to very positive. And then you have to put your line that after this line is the positive side, this side of the line is the negative side. And when a person is thinking about these things, studying about these things, and wanting to develop themselves spiritually, what happens is the position of your line is going to change. And it might move backwards and forwards, because you may be an idealist, and then according to your ideals, you'll move your needle over here, and then you'll say only these things are good and all these other things are bad, and then you'll find that you're unable to operate that way because it's just too rigid, it's too extreme, and you have to compromise, shift. Then you say, oh well, then I'm gray, you know. Well, should we be black and white, or is it that we have to be in grey areas, or what? So then you have to keep thinking and maybe discussing, and that's work.
We're very susceptible to the influences that you just mentioned, but also mainly the people that we have in our lives currently, aren't we? Because if you grew up in a family who's in alignment with your own value system, whether that's extreme dishonesty or extreme honesty, one tends to go along with that and not change oneself for the rest of one's life. Why is it that it's more important to fit in and just to be the way we are, rather than listen to the voice of your conscience that says to you, what I am doing at the moment is completely and utterly wrong. I'm hating myself for doing this. I do it anyway. Why is that?
Well, there are many things that are coming to bear on a person. If you remember on another program, I'd mentioned that 30 years ago I came upon some research which said that almost all families in the US are dysfunctional, and well, that probably applies just as well to European families, and then you can extend it and extend it and find that, you know, most families in the world are dysfunctional to some degree. So if you say, okay, most families in the world are to a greater or lesser extent dysfunctional, then you have to see yourself. I mean, is my family functional, normal, slightly dysfunctional, very dysfunctional? And you start looking at the criteria. And one of the things that happens is everybody thinks I'm normal, other people are dysfunctional. I must be normal, because if I'm not normal, then that's too much to manage, so I'm normal. And then you will see other people who are better off than you, other people who are worse off than you, in various different ways. Now, within your own family, if you say, okay, the most important thing is I have to fit in. Now, if you want to fit in with something that's not real for you or not functional, then you have to become very false. And that may be your choice. You say, fitting in is more important than being real. So, okay, that's what you do. And then you become a person who is very disconnected from their essence. Mm. And that makes you superficial. Mm. So everything about you will appear to be contrived. And then people who know you well will know this. People who don't know you well will think that you're performing very nicely. So fitting in is a good option, because you get away with it with strangers. Then you may be another type of person who says, well, I am different. I don't know how come I got born in this family. I don't have anything in common with these people. I don't understand, but I am not like bees. So then you're on your own, and so you're a misfit, or you're a non-conformist, and people point the finger at you as, you know, what's wrong with you? Why don't you conform? You must be a bad person. So then, you know, it's a kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't situation. And this is where people start to invent images for themselves, like sort of spin doctoring. And then you maybe look at some celebrity or someone who you're impressed with in the public domain and model yourself on them, which you can't do very well because you'd be making a sort of cardboard cutout, a lookalike, but it doesn't have substance, it doesn't have depth, you see. So this is going to create a feeling of anxiety inside, because it's so shallow, because it's not real. And if you go to the real part of yourself, well, it's too strange, it's too painful, you don't know how to deal with it. So it can be a very, very painful situation. And so then a person will try to avoid feeling that, and this is where you start into addictive behaviors or substance abuse, which is a way of covering up those unmanageable inner feelings, and that leads to disaster. Yeah. A lot of people do that.
Mm. So Denise, you know, if somebody is upwardly mobile in their career and uses dishonest practices to accumulate an income, but part of his value system means that, you know, by the time I'm 35, I want to be a millionaire, and he/she is well on his way there, and yet something within him says that, you know, honesty is also important to me. How does one would use this dichotomy inside, where you want to be a good person, where you have conflicting wants? How do you make peace with that?
Well, I think you need to do a lot of work to make peace with that, and you have to choose. But what people normally do, they don't make peace with that. They separate themselves into little compartments, and in psychological terminology, they call this compartmentalization, and they have these different characters, and they keep these parts of their lives absolutely separate, so that the people in the family never see what they do at work or who they work with, and maybe they have a social life which is completely separate from their work and their family. So it's a kind of multi-personality type that will fulfill one desire through one character, and then another desire through another character, and these characters are absolutely at odds with each other, and the person is really fragmented.
Sister Denise, you used a lovely expression which has a resonance of silence about it. You said that people haven't connected with their essence. Would you take us through that?
Well, the aim of spiritual practice is to enable a person to find the self, to find the inner core, the silent point of light within that is really the soul in its essential state, you know. And then from the soul, then you come out as different characters. But the thing is, these characters have to have a congruence and a continuity, the one to the other. But when you segregate the characters and they become sort of incoherent with each other and incongruous, then you have a psychological problem. And so you need to really work out how are you going to come to terms with all of these different characters. And you need to make walls, or make holes in the walls, so that it's the same essential being who's being a boss at work, who's being a mother at home, who's being a tennis player on the court, who's being, you know, walking with the dog on the beach, and all the various different personalities, the different roles that we play, but that they are coherent with each other, and there's a naturalness, so that you're dealing with the same person, you know. But when people separate different parts of themselves and totally have no continuity, then we don't know who we're dealing with, you see. And that person loses contact with the self. And they start to be, I think, psychologically sick. And then they will rationalize and justify actions which are totally abhorrent to another part of themselves, and sort of explain it away by just flipping from one self to another self. That's a bit schizophrenic.
Okay, that sounds scary. Okay, so...
But there are people in that situation, yes, because of their desires, you see.
I've met a few. Okay, so tell me, when you reach crisis point and you now have decided that you have to do something, and you look at your own value system and realize, I'm a dishonest person, I'm weak, I'm submissive, I'm untrustworthy, etc. So do you do what with this information?
When you decide at any point in your life, it may be a crisis point, or it may be that you're just stopping to be a teenager and becoming an adult. That's another very important transition point where you want to sit down and figure out who you are and what your values are. But what you find is that your personality is a combination of good and bad, light and dark, and you need to know, okay, well, what are the ingredients here that I'm working with? And it's very valuable to put down on a piece of paper with a line down the middle, what are my good points, what are my bad points, and just take a look and see overall what are we dealing with here. It's a kind of rigorous self-analysis, because until and unless you do that, you're not really completely clear about who you are and what you are, and there is no person who's totally black, totally white. It doesn't work that way.
You're not referring to race, are you?
I'm talking about the condition of your being, in the sense that you know, the parts of yourselves that you say, these are good parts, these are the nice parts, this is the me that I like, the bright, the illuminated, whatever. And then when you're looking at your dark side of your being, your rage, your fears, the parts of you that you really don't want to deal with. But when you're doing a rigorous analysis of yourself, you have to take stock of this and really put, you know, these are my plus points, these are my minus points, and see what kind of a total you get. And I mean, you may say, okay, well, I'm a 50-50.
Yeah.
You know, half good and half bad. So, okay, now what do you want to do with that, you see? Some people say, well, I want to be 100% something, you know, and have no bad traits at all. That would be an idealist. And there are a lot of people who are idealistic about themselves, idealistic about what they expect in other people. And idealistic is contrasted with realistic. And realistic is that, you know, you have to understand that there are parts of yourself which you consider to be weaknesses or negative or whatever, but you have to work with that. They don't have to be a handicap.
What does that mean?
Well,
your weaknesses need not be a handicap.
No.
But we know that most people think their weaknesses are a handicap. Okay, so what do you do with your weaknesses then, if they're not a handicap?
Well, if you really work with them and come to terms with them and are honest with yourself about them, you may say, okay, my weakness is that I'm, you know, I get very easily intimidated. And so then you say, okay, well, this is my weak point, so I have to build myself up in that area, so that instead of being a handicap, I kind of transform it so that I can work with it in such a way that it doesn't cause me to go into loss or to do something wrong or get manipulated, something like this. If you're really conscious of it, then you can figure out things. It's similar to a person who may be blind or deaf or something. They will do things to compensate so that they can get everything done that they want to do, and that thing, while it is, you know, a missing sense perception or whatever, they don't experience a life of being handicapped because of it. Do you see what I'm saying? So you have to do that with our characteristics as well. And what you can also do is turn your weaknesses into strengths.
How on earth do you do that?
Well, sometimes a person may have been sick, for example, from a very young age, which means that they never got to develop their social skills because they were isolated. They couldn't develop their sporting skills or so, but then they develop other skills. Like, they become very good students, they become very good at music or listening, or they develop their inner world, so that the overall total, while not being what it might otherwise have been, is nevertheless a very beautiful configuration, you know. And then they bring some, you know, when you have to deal with something really negative and you really do deal with it, you can find a silver lining in that bad thing, and work with that silver lining so that it then becomes something that is a positive attribute, because you have worked with it to transform it in that way.
Mr. Denise, one needs a lot of personal ambition to pull this off, because you're speaking about a lot of investment of you into you. How do you get that ambition? Because it sounds like, you know, even before you embark on this journey, looking at the looking at one's fractured mind and realizing, oh gosh, this was me, and then saying, yes, it is. So you have to believe in the best in yourself to even start. How do you see the best you if there's no evidence?
You know, people see themselves reflected in other people's eyes.
Yes.
So if you see yourself hated by other people, that makes you hate yourself. If there's people who love you, irrespective of whatever it is that you think is bad about you, that is a very, very powerful influence to inspire you to really make something of yourself. So having really loving people around you is great. Not everybody has that. And this is where I think that a relationship with the Supreme Being is very important, because once you've been able to have even a second of contact with that being, that energy, an experience that you are loved, that you are accepted exactly as you are, that can be enough to say, well, I can't be totally bad, because this one who you revere and so on and so on, this one likes me because I felt it, I know it. Therefore, that gives me enough inspiration to build myself up, because I know that I am accepted, I am loved for exactly what I am.
Is rebuilding your values, is it a mental aspect? Because you spoke a lot about self-work and connecting with the essence. Does it involve words? Does it involve conduct? What levels do you work on to get there? To wake up one day and say, I'm a dishonest person and I hate myself for it, and a year later wake up and say, you know, I can actually now honestly say I am a person of integrity. that transition involves what level of work?
Well, I think it's an ongoing thing. A friend of mine was dealing with an aspect of herself that she thought was quite negative and was very difficult to shift. But then she got an insight where she saw that, you know, I'm putting myself in that situation, and had an experience of disgust, which was a very powerful experience. You know, I am disgusted with myself for putting myself in that situation, and then saying that somebody else is putting me there, but it's not true. You see, so once you can actually, you know, cut through that self-deception and start seeing the situation differently, then you're in a position to be able to do some work. And for this friend of mine, it was enough to totally change her life around in that area. So I think if one person can do it and also articulate it, maybe even describe it to other people who can then see, yeah, I know what you're talking about, I can do that too. You know, it becomes an inspiration.
Mm. Self-deception, is it a problem in this journey? And how big a problem is it?
It's quite difficult for people to be honest with themselves because everyone wants to look good.
And okay, so are you saying we're more concerned about the veneer than being someone of substance?
Because we're reflected in other people's eyes, so we want other people to give us a good reflection. So if they see a nice, good surface, they're going to reflect that back to us and reinforce that, you see. Because very few people can penetrate and see through this mask that we create for ourselves. And so we have to be able to get some situation, something that will let us know that you're deceiving yourself. And something or another will happen. And then when you get a little message like that, or a big message like that, then you say, okay, now what was that?
Mm.
Am I really fooling myself? You know, really your best friends are the ones who will call you on your falsehood.
Your best friends are the ones who will call you on your falsehood. You need real friends then?
You do.
Yeah, okay. Also not a easily available commodity. Okay, you mentioned God a few minutes ago in this process. How does he engage with somebody who's spiritually upwardly mobile?
Spiritually upwardly mobile happens when you bring God into your life.
Mm-hmm.
And the process of bringing God into your life starts somewhere, or you may be born with it, or, you know, it varies enormously, but someone who has absolutely nothing like that in their life, there'll be something really missing, there'll be an emptiness which will start to, you know, ring a bell and say, excuse me, you know, we need some filling up here, do something about it. And maybe some more powerful event will happen to say, okay, I really need to look at this.
Okay, Sister Denise, unfortunately we have to say goodbye to you right now. It's been an exceptionally informative half an hour. I hope that you were able to identify with what an experienced yogi was saying about the way what we have become, and that there are alternatives. And by that I mean Sister Denise has shared with us that we can become something other than what we currently are. You're not doomed to have the same personality for the rest of your life, and it's in your hands to transform yourself. So thank you very much for this deeply inspiring message. I hope that you heard something here today that you can actually put into practice in your life. You'll note that nothing Sister Denise shares is a theory. It's all about reality and putting it into practice in your life. So thank you, and thank you, and goodbye for now.